Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. Glad you're tuned into NPR News today. In the year since George Floyd's murder, a vigorous and often divisive debate has been going on about policing. The tactics that police officers are trained to use, the perceptions that they carry into encounters with Black Americans, the warrior approach to public safety. In this year and on this show, we've spoken with chiefs of police, rank-and-file officers, police researchers, community leaders, and you, the citizens that police departments are sworn to serve. Today, it's a discussion with two committed activists who see the solutions to police violence and public safety in different ways. And I know that we'd all like to hear from you. Have your views changed in the past year about the role that police departments should play in our communities? Have you found yourself torn between arguments for defunding or reallocating police resources and concerns about what that would mean for your own neighborhood? I'm asking you this morning to reflect on where you've been in this last year and whether your views have changed about how police departments serve your community. Have you found yourself divided between arguments for reallocating resources that go to police departments and then concerns about what that might mean for whatever community or neighborhood that you live in? Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828. D.A. Bullock is with us, North Minneapolis, resident filmmaker, local activist, and a member of Reclaim the Block's communications team. He's with us from Minneapolis. And D.A., welcome. It's good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sondra Samuels is with us, president and CEO of the Northside Achievement Zone, also with us from Minneapolis. And Sondra, welcome. It's good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Carrie.
DA, as you know, there's a lot of different voices calling for some kind of reform, restructuring, reallocating the money that goes to the Minneapolis Police Department. And I think it's, since I think a lot of people project their own ideas onto that, I think it's important that we're clear on what you mean when you talk about removing some of the money that the Minneapolis Police Department gets. Can you describe what you're thinking about?
Sure. I mean, I think we're always talking about, and we've been talking about this for a long time, like how do we best use the resources that we have that are dedicated to our public safety? And that continues to be the conversation. That's always been the conversation. That's the current conversation. But, you know, this kind of structure of whether it's defund versus, you know, this current sort of call for more police is really not our current situation. Our current situation is really about how are we really wasting our public safety resources right now? Because currently the proposal to cap the number of police was voted down. Last year's budget, you know, the Minneapolis Police Department received $5 million set aside to pay overtime, you know, $6.4 million to fund two new recruiting classes. So the police department is fully intact, fully funded. And so our question and our discussion should be about, like, how are we really effectively using resources? Are we receiving competent public safety? And I would certainly say in North Minneapolis, we are not, and we haven't been for a very long time.
Okay, I'm just going to follow up though on what you've said, because there's nuance to what you're describing here. Are you saying that you're not, you and Reclaim the Block and some of the other organizations are not calling for a kind of a total reimagining of the way that we fund public safety through the Minneapolis Police Department. You are not calling for that now?
No, I didn't say that. I said, what I said was, the conversation we're currently having is about the resources that we've dedicated to public safety. So what I'm saying is, I think we just had a sort of misdirection that's been played upon us that's saying that we're in this argument about, so there's an assumption that the police have been defunded, and they haven't. They're fully funded right now. So I don't even understand why we're having philosophical conversations about what I believe. We should have a conversation about what's currently happening right now. Like, I think that's a distraction. I think really, honestly, it's been used as a distraction to sort of make people afraid that we've defunded our police department, and now we're seeing this increase in crime. And that's not the case. That's not the honest truth and reality of what's going on, especially in places like North Minneapolis, because we've seen this for a very long time.
Sondra, you spoke to a Washington Post journalist recently, and you pointed out the number of people, including the children, who have died or been seriously injured in gun violence. And you said the rhetoric around defund has gotten us to where we are today. Not everybody is an Officer Chauvin. We need police in this city. Now, if I hear Mr. Bullock, he's saying we're not taking a look at the landscape that we're living in here and saying, let's take all the money away and let's remove the police from the streets. So what are you concerned about when it comes to the rhetoric?
Yeah, hi. Thank you, Carrie. And I want to just say hi to DA as well. So great to be on the show with you, DA. We love each other and just disagree
absolutely
on some points.
I hear you.
In a way that makes for a great democracy. So a couple things, Carrie, before I jump into that, just DA talked about, so it is about resources, right? It's about safety and it's about resources, because you need resources to have a public safety department, whether you call it police or public safety, to keep people safe, right? And the fact is, so I'm part of Minneapolis 8, and there are 8 residents who are suing the city of Minneapolis for violating the charter amendment. So we just had a hearing the other day, our second hearing. We were before Judge Anderson, and she'll make a decision about whether the city is in violation in the next month or so. And what I will tell you, so I have all the numbers that support our suit. And in fact, the city has defunded the police. It's cut its budget by more than 15% since January 2020. The city council defunded the police. The MPD budget in 2020 was $193 million. It now stands at $164 million. We, at the beginning of 2020, and the defunding, by the way, both the rhetoric and the actual defunding have demoralized the force that is left. And the chief will tell you, our African-American police chief, that the force is down. He's down a third of his officers, right? A third. And all of the departments that were under the police that build community relations, that would be a part of reform and rebuilding trust in the community, have been taken away by the city council from the police, you know, from navigators to police athletic leads to bike cops, you know, all that's been removed. And so the city council right now is actually making what I say as a Black mother living in North Minneapolis, I don't want a militarized police force. You know, I want one that is that follows real reform. So I am for, and what our suit is for, and what I think the majority of North Minneapolitans are for, and I would say many Minneapolitans, and we'll find out because I think it'll be a vote in November, is we want both and. We want real reform, Carrie, but we also need police. There is just not a utopia right now where we don't have police. We have had 3 babies shot in North Minneapolis, 6 years old, Anaya, 8-year-old Trinity right down the street from me. I heard the shots, was able to go down right after it happened. 10-year-old LaDavion. And there is a direct correlation between this movement around defund. And because what DA is talking about when he says reallocate resources,
yes,
reclaim the block is about also getting rid of police. So let's like be really clear.
So
and we have not had 3 babies shot in the head in a 2-week period. It's since I've lived here. I've been here in North Minneapolis for like 24 years. And so we have to be honest with what we're doing, the impact of both the rhetoric and the actions of the city council and groups that like Reclaim the Block that are motivating them to make us less safe.
Okay. So I want to grab a call, but DA, I'm also going to come back to you with a question that follows up on what Sandra is saying. So to Johnny in Wisconsin. Hi, Johnny. What are you thinking about?
I'm thinking that this trial, I've heard in the news, we can already draw on some experience from other cities doing the cutback. And if I'm not mistaken, totally getting rid of the police and supplanting it with something else. If the speakers, your guests have an idea of what we might draw on experientially from these other cities across the nation, that would be interesting.
Okay, it's a good question. And DA, let me come to you, because I know there are cities where advocacy groups have successfully pulled money away from police budgets for other community services responding to public safety concerns. Denver, New York, Austin, Texas. Are you using any of those cities in the as models in the way that you're thinking about this?
Certainly, we can use a number of cities as models. Eugene, Oregon has the CAHOOTS system that responds to mental health crisis without armed response.
Right.
But I want to go back to something that Sandra was
sure.
saying, because there was some inaccuracy in what she was saying. I've never seen any data that has said the discussion of defunding the police has resulted in increased crime. And in fact, the 5 cities that are of similar size to ours in the past year that have received the most increase in murder and violent crime, St. Louis, Birmingham, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, all have like double the amount of police per capita that we have. So they have twice the amount as police per capita and significantly amounts more of violent crime, including murder. So we really have to talk about the efficacy, the competency, and the effectiveness of our current system in order for us to just assume increasing that or doubling down on that is going to actually increase in our public safety. And unfortunately, to our trauma and our hurt and our pain, we have experienced the shooting and killing of young people.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Nazelle George, who died in 2012 from a gunshot. We had a full complement of patrol officers and MPD and in the 4th Precinct. And that was during Don Samuel's 3rd term in office. So this thing goes way back beyond our current crisis of harm that's happening in our communities. We know this history, and it's happened with a full complement of police. You know, this past weekend, we saw a mass shooting happen within sightline distance of the 1st Precinct of the Minneapolis Police Department. That happened right in front of it. So these shooters are not deterred or prevented by police presence. So we really have to talk about competency. We really have to talk about effectiveness, because we are talking about a limited amount of public safety dollars.
I just have one quick follow-up to that. Do you believe that, because Sandra talks about reform and funding, full funding too, into public safety. Do you think that real reform can happen in the police department culturally, the way they their tactics, the way they serve communities without some reallocation of funds? I mean, can you get the kind of reform that you want to see without taking away some of the money from the department?
No, we obviously cannot see a competent, effective change in the results if we don't change the allocation of resources. So I think it's clear that we need to do that. And I think there's even been some agreement that certain jobs the police just are not well suited to attend to. I think, again, we want to shift the focus of the conversation to where we're having these fundamental disagreements and making sure that people understand the truth of what we're talking about.
Got it.
Which is, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I want to reintroduce you both and make sure that as listeners tune in to what I think is a really interesting conversation here, they know who we are. D.A. Bullock is with us, North Minneapolis resident, filmmaker, local activist, a member of Reclaim the Block's communications team. And Sandra Samuels is with us, president and CEO of the Northside Achievement Zone. They are two activists, long dedicated and committed to flourishing communities, and yet they come to this debate that has been going on before George Floyd's murder, but most urgently since George Floyd's murder, about how to reform the way police departments serve the community. And does that include reallocating large amounts of the money that support the Minneapolis Police Department and other city police departments? And they come to this with different views on that. And so as you listen to their ideas and opinions, I'm asking you whether your views have changed in the last year about the way the role police departments should play in our communities. And do you find yourself torn between arguments for reallocating, defunding large amounts of money that support the Minneapolis Police Department and other city police departments, and concerns about what that might mean for your community? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Sandra, I know you want a chance to get in here. Please go ahead.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the big thing. So let me just say, Carrie, I agree with DA on so many things, right? We definitely need support. Public safety is more than policing, right? And it is about mental health support, social service supports, but it's also about other systems that lend themselves to hopelessness that we find in community violence. So we're talking about an educational system that's racist. So it's not just the police, right? It all scaffolds up. Educational system that's racist, a judicial system that's racist, a healthcare system that's racist. I mean, we could just go on, right? And what we have to do, and this is what I think organizations like Reclaim the Block and the majority of the city council are missing, and it's just simply wisdom. Mm-hmm. And wisdom says, if I make this decision because I'm trying to solve that problem, how many more problems will it create? And then when you do that analysis, it makes your fundamental decision different because you want to minimize the collateral damage from that one decision you're making. And that's what they're simply not doing, because this city has money. It has money, Carrie. Come on now. As well as our state. We don't have to take from the police department. Again, a third, we have about 650 officers when we should have about 888 officers, okay? Taking more money from them, taking away their ability to rebuild trust, to the ability to support our police chief right now, has caused us to have like 30 people murdered so far this year.
Sandra,
four years, we averaged 10 people murdered, okay, in the last previous 4 years. And when DA compares us to the other cities around their increase in homicides, he used Birmingham, right? Was Birmingham one?
Yes.
Their increase in homicides, plus they have a well-staffed police force. You can't compare it. Birmingham, in the last 4 years, our average was 10. In the last 4 years, Birmingham had 446 homicides. That's over. That's like 110 a year. We've never hit 110 homicides a year. So that's the analysis. It's so faulty. We have to deal with what we are dealing with here in this city.
All
and
right.
It is getting the police reform right, but also making sure we have enough police so that three babies in the span of 2 weeks are not shot in the head.
Sandra and DA, I'm going to take some calls here to Bobby in Minneapolis. Hi, Bobby. What are you thinking about?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, and I really appreciate this segment and your guests today. I'm a Minneapolis resident, and I witnessed personally for the first time in my life, I felt the need to own a gun last year. And there was a huge wave of new gun owners. The shelves were empty. The lines were long. You can't even buy ammo anymore. And I want to hear these very intelligent people speak about how that could very easily have, you know, some of the effects we're seeing right now with all this additional violence.
Bobby, your phone interrupted there for just a second. Did you say you felt the need to purchase a gun last year? Okay.
I'm definitely a gun control advocate. I've been, I raised my son and myself. We never wanted to be around guns, never thought of the need for them, never felt the need for them. You know, with the increased density of our local scene last year, I felt the need for the first time to go out and get one. And I don't regret that decision, but I do know that there was a huge flux of people that ran out and got guns last year.
Yeah.
And how does that trickle down to possibly, I'm just asking, does that trickle down to more violence in the local scene the next year or thereafter?
DA, let me put that. Yeah, thank you, Bobby. Let me put that one to you with the acknowledgement that I heard you say earlier that one of the areas in which these shootings occurred was heavily policed. There were police officers right there. So acknowledging what you've said about that and then taking Bobby's question about is the proliferation of guns pushing back against, you know, additional policing in some of these areas where these shootings are happening. What's your view of that?
Well, I know in 2019, we had 49 homicides in the city of Minneapolis, and most of them were, you know, young black men killed by gun violence. And so that was with a full complement, 880-some officers, 580-some patrol officers, right? A full complement of MPD before the killing of George Floyd, before the pandemic. That was sort of our baseline to view this. And so we know that, you know, North Minneapolis has always been awash with illegal guns, and we know that it's easy enough to get a gun for a 14- or 15-year-old. And we've known that for years. We've known that since I've lived here in 2010. And we know the tactics of the police are to do pretext stops, which are discriminatory, and they're only producing 12% arrest of contraband. So even the discrimination, they're one tactic that is highly discriminatory and against the civil rights of black residents is not even effective. So again, I want to point us to the idea of what can we do that is actually effective?
Mm-hmm.
Not what can we do that is the immediate sort of knee-jerk response to fear, mm-hmm. which is like, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. we should just increase police.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. We really have to talk about effectiveness. We mm-hmm. really do. And so if that's not the start mm-hmm. of the conversation, mm-hmm. Then we're really not getting anywhere.
Sandra,
to answer your caller's question, I do think it's influenced by the increased access to guns, but that has been a condition in North Minneapolis, and any resident can tell you that's been a condition in North Minneapolis for a very long time.
Sandra, to this question of effectiveness and the fact that these shootings are occurring and this violence is occurring in some parts of the city that are highly policed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like North Minneapolis, where I live, exactly what DA was talking about. So, you know, I'm going to say again, Carrie, no, there's no argument around whole structural transformation needs to happen. I'm going to tell you that I believe our chief is working to do that, and he has one hand behind his back because of the city council. And, you know, the thing that what the caller talked about in terms of more guns, we have black church women of different churches in North Minneapolis who are now going to the gun range, right?
Wow.
And they're not going to the gun range because they think that a police is going to shoot them. They're going to the gun range because they're afraid of the community violence. We've had my window shut. And so even as DA talks about effectiveness, you know, and there were 13 homicides in 2020, 13 homicides. OK. And we are at 30 right now. I mean, you have to be able to do the math. If you had 840 officers. And by the way, the 888 is what the number has been. We haven't had that in the last couple of years. That's the target number per the charter. We've had about 840. Now we're down to 600, about 600 officers, right? You're seeing 30 homicides. You're seeing more and more people get guns. Just yesterday, I mean, so not making the correlation, Carrie, to the rhetoric of defund, the rhetoric of we don't need police, and the fact that we have so few police. And then we did a buyout. We allowed police to retire early. I mean, it is crazy. Other cities that are seeing the same thing that have sense, like Atlanta, and I'm following my girl, Keisha Bottoms, they're actually looking at how do we both do transformation, and Keisha and her police chief are working on that.
She's the mayor.
And increase. Uh-huh. And increase the number of police that we have. They're trying to get funding for 2,000 police officers. And so, and here's one other thing, Carrie, I want to say. When I talk about increasing the number of police, I'm not talking about over what the charter says. I'm talking about the fact that there just aren't enough police to they can't do preventive work. They can't meet with community. That was all taken away because of the city council. Many of them are on overtime. We're set up for more egregious acts, right? Because they're like fried. And I don't, as a mother in this community and working with all of these black kids who are getting shot and killed, one of my partners yesterday who runs the Capri mm-hmm. Theater in North Minneapolis
yeah.
and PCYC was in the middle of a shootout at 12 p.m. yesterday, Carrie. And like saw the gun, saw the shooter. And you know why it's happening? It is happening in a wanton way, unchecked. And it's not just the homicides. It's the carjackings. It's the running red lights. It's the hot rotting that's hurting people in the middle of cities because they know the police are tapped. They are tapped. And it's disingenuous and dangerous to not say, yep, that's true. And we got to do something different. I agree with that part.
Let's hear from David before we go to news, and then we can talk about something that he's raising. Hi, David. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi. I like to say thanks, Sandra, for the great work you're doing. My name is David Boyd. I'm the former Neighborhood Community Engagement Commissioner for North Minneapolis, which was called the First District.
Uh-huh.
We spent over 3 years doing a study about what was happening in the city as a whole. We got over 100,000 responses. We wrote a 10-page report, submitted it to City Council. They approved it. The Neighborhood Community Relations Department shelved the report because in our report, we basically said, if the police aren't doing inclusion and treating people correctly, we're going to hold back 5% of their funding for a year until they meet standards. And it amazes me, a year after I left the commission, we have the George Floyd situation that happened,
mm-hmm.
and we spent all this time and money where our city is failing us as a city.
So David, so that I and listeners understand this, you're saying you had a concern about the behavior and the culture of the department, and you were saying if that doesn't change, we're going to hold back between 5 to 10% of the funding until we see these standards change. Do I have that?
That is very correct. It was a report that was submitted to the Peace Committee of the City Council. that handled all of our funding that we spread out to the communities, but the report was shelved. I have copies of it. Other people in the commission have copies of it. It just blew my mind, especially when the George Floyd situation happened, mm-hmm. when we had all the information and we could have did what our communities wanted and made a substantial change, but our city council dropped the ball on our city once again. And then they have the assistance of the Neighborhood Community Relations Department that help enforce and not go forward with what the community and the residents of the city of Minneapolis want, but instead what they want to happen. I.e., prime example is they change the Neighborhood Community Relations Commission to a new commission to where they hand-pick their commissioners versus in the past, the residents picked mm-hmm. their commissioners.
Okay, so David, let me do that. I have to get to a news break here. When we come back, I'll ask DA and Sandra about what you basically reported out after this commission and whether something like that would still be effective. You're listening to a conversation this morning between D.A. Bullock, North Minneapolis resident filmmaker, local activist. He's a member of Reclaim the Block's communications team, and Sandra Samuels, president and CEO of the North Side Achievement Zone. What is the most effective way to change some of the ways that policing is done in the community? There seems to be pretty widespread agreement for reform. What's the most effective way to get to that reform, and what does it look like? How about you? Have your views changed in the past year about the role that police departments play in our community? Has the recent gun violence in Minneapolis, maybe it's in your own neighborhood, shaped your ideas about this? Back to the conversation now. I want to go right to DA here. So DA, you heard David describing this commission's report and the idea that funding gets withheld unless the culture and the standards change in the department. Is that enough?
No. So I want to make sure listeners are clear on sort of the understanding of the chain of command of how Minneapolis Police Department operates. It is under the sole and unitary control of the mayor and by his appointment, the chief of police. The city council, the only thing they can do is either fund it for the year at a certain level or not fund it at a year at a certain level. They have no control over the operations of the police department. They can try to direct them and ask them to come help. In our ward, we had that in Ward 4. But the police can decide, no, we're going to do a different tactic. We're not going to do that. And in fact, anytime there has been a request for them to reallocate resources, they still get the ultimate decision about where those resources go. So when Sandra mentioned all those programs that were snatched out of the police department, mm-hmm. that's not true. The police department gets to decide what programs they fund and do not fund and the effectiveness and the tactics mm-hmm. therein. So that's, I just want to like level set so people understand, because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about how the city of Minneapolis operates. And so to that point, you can say we're going to take like this $8 million, which we took last year from the budget and try to direct the police department to do certain things with that money or that reduction of money. But then the chief gets the ultimate decision about how he does that. So he can keep his horse police and get rid of, basketball. He can do that. That's his decision. And ultimately, we have no control over that.
Got it.
I think we also have to talk about the politicization of the chief of police, which we're currently experiencing, in that, where the chief can be affable, and I think he's genuine in his concern for residents. Mm-hmm. He's also not credible in that he doesn't share the information and transparency that is required to do real fundamental change in the police department. And so I ask people to really think about words like reform, and don't think about the word, because the word sounds great. It's like change. Like that word sounds great to everybody. Like actually look at what is actually happening. Look at, the fact that we don't know
the name of the officer who punched a teenager in the face in North Minneapolis recently, that we don't know the names of any or in the discipline around any of the officers that put 80 residents in the hospital during the protest. These are just, you know, First Amendment protesters that through these less than lethal means were put into the hospital. We don't know anything about how the fact that most of the discipline within the department is pushed into this coaching idea where it's not discipline at all. So what are we looking at and what are we experiencing in terms of real change in the police department? And I've asked numbers of people and they cannot point to anything substantive or material that has changed within the police department. In fact, many of them say that, you know, another George Floyd could happen tomorrow. So we're talking about being over-policed and under-protected. Uh-huh. That's the common refrain that I'm hearing. And that speaks to effectiveness and use of resources and waste of resources. But it also speaks to what does real protection look like? Like, what does real prevention look like? What does real intervention look like? And in all of this conversation, trying to shift blame to the city council, and, you know, it's all like smoke and mirrors to not allow us to focus on the actual chain of command and the unitary design of control over police. If we want to change that and give that over to the city council, then you know, we have a vote this November that'll allow us to do that. Mm-hmm. But until that point, we need to talk about who's in charge right now. What are the changes that you're supposedly making? How have we seen that on the street? If we haven't seen that on the street, then what is the use of all this idea of culture change when and honestly, one person doesn't change the culture of the police department. Generally, the police department changes the culture of that one person. Okay. And I think that's what we've been seeing.
Let me go back to the phones. We have a number of people that have been holding and are responding specifically to some of the things you both are saying to Kinshasa in South Minneapolis. Hi, Kinshasa. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
What do you want to say?
A couple of things. I'm a Sandra Samuels groupie, so every time she's on NPR, I'm always listening to her.
I'm glad.
First time that I've had an opportunity to say anything. There's something that you said that really catches my attention, and that's the whole issue of racism. You know, our real pandemic, the real issue in this country is racism. And certainly in terms of the responsibility of racism, it becomes ours, those of us who are being victimized by a system that doesn't include us. Certainly the police department, everything that you're talking about right now, which I appreciate both of you so very much, we could have had this. I was in the mayor's office for 4 years, from 2002 to 2006. What I realized back in 2006, and for a little while anyway, I was in charge of the mayor's representative of the police. And what I realized is that our young people were being traumatized. And so even before Resma's book, My Grandmother's Hands, I had suggested healing circles with the police and our young people and men from the community so that we could all heal together. Within a couple of weeks, I lost that particular part of my job because certainly the whole issue of healing was not a part of it. And my real challenge in terms of any conversation that we have, and I have been, unfortunately, in far too many conversations about the police and about racism, is that until white America is willing to heal itself, then it's a really intellectual masturbation, because the real players who need to be at the table and really be doing the work to heal our educational system, our police system, our the hospitals, you name the system, it's all the same problem.
Sandra.
And I'm saying that we really need to ask some questions and get to the core of what our real illness has been, because it's certainly the only America that I've ever known.
Sandra?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Kinshasa more. And Resma's book, My Grandmother's Hands, Healing Our Racialized Trauma, Minds and Bodies. That book actually speaks to the Black community, the white community, and the blue community. The book is specifically around healing in terms of all three of the communities. And I just got to say, again, wisdom says, let's look at the totality of the problem, the whole problem, to come up with whole solutions. So racism is the iceberg, okay? George Floyd's killing at the hands of a police department, a police man, is part of that iceberg. It ain't the iceberg. You know, we have, and I just want to say this, and Kinshasa is totally right. Until we get at the root, and not just scapegoat the moment, but let's use this moment. You know, George Floyd himself, before he died, spoke to kids in his community in Houston, and he begged them to put down the guns. Why do they even have guns? Why do they feel the need to kill each other, right? What's happening? And it's rooted in racism. And we can talk about that more, but just two things, Carrie, that are not about what the police chief does, mm-hmm. but arbitration rules. Okay, when my husband was on city council, DA mentioned that he had three different chiefs who worked under him, right? And city council, DA is incorrect around what power they have, because they can say how when he has a recruit class, if safe officers who are community prevention officers are under him or not, because they've been taken away, the people I would call in community, the chief didn't decide that. But anyway, up with the three police chiefs, every time they fired a archetype of the Chauvin who had cost the city millions in beating Black heads in, right? Every time they fired the people, the union rules of arbitration, which our state failed to change, 50% of the time they had to rehire those officers back, Carrie. That doesn't have anything to do with the police. They've been fighting that union rule, this police union, though, mm-hmm. and they can't get that. I couldn't even run my organization if I had to hire back people who I thought were robbing me or killing the kids who are part of NAS. And then the other thing around the violence in our community, again, not within the hands of the police. Our judges over the last year have had a record release of violent offenders. People who have committed homicide, people who have committed violent offenses, they've let them back out in droves. And all of this, Carrie, again, is, and I'm going to tell you, it started with the George Floyd's murder. I'm going to lay it right there at the feet. Change has to happen now. I am so with DA. And then it got precipitated by organizations like Reclaim the Block, threatening the city council members to lose their politically correct stance, and also not wanting people to have effigies on their lawns. But for nine of them to stand up and make a public vow to defund and get rid of the police. And I tell you, when you have a city where your leaders who are in control, we have a weak mayor system. Okay, that we're trying to change. When you have your leader stand up, if I were to go to NAS and say, okay, all of you family achievement coaches, I have a plan that I am going to get rid of you all because you all are terrible. I'm thinking that won't go too well. And so part of the PSTDs and the cops leaving and the early retirement have all fueled the chief having a third of his officers, while more and more guns are out there, more and more violent offenders are being released.
So, Sandra, let me go back to DA then. And DA, we've kind of come full circle, haven't we? Kind of where we started. I want to give you a chance to respond in full to that. What do you want to say?
Sure. So what Sandra is saying is a political sort of campaign. And we heard even yesterday, we read Minnesota Reformer had an article about how politicized the office of the chief of police and the mayor's office has become, and that they've been coordinating with some of these pro-police organizations, including Operation Safety Now and Sandra's organization, MPLS Voices, in coordination, like writing their campaign literature and doing basically their PR. setting up interviews with the chief in order to forward this politicized notion. The notion is not about our public safety. It's about a politicized idea, which is let's increase the police. So I know Sandra keeps pointing to Reclaim the Block, but that's really a distraction because there are other political actors in play here. And in fact, you know, in part of that reporting, there was talk about a charter commissioner and one of the council members changing their vote. So there's a lot of ethical concerns about the politicization of the chief of police. And he may be an affable person. And like I said, he may be well-meaning, but I don't think he's credible right now when it comes to the information that's coming out of the police department. And I don't think he's credible right now in terms of true change that we're going to see. So
okay.
I say that to say, don't believe me, don't believe Sandra. You all, your listeners should go out and get this information for themselves because we are going to have an opportunity to vote for ourselves, which is the proper way that we should do governance in this city. It shouldn't be in the hands of a select few people or friends of the mayor or friends of the chief of police. Public safety should be a conversation amongst all of us, and we should all have an equal say in what our future holds and the effectiveness of how we spent our money in the past.
Let's hear from one more listener here. I think we can get this call in to Susu in Minneapolis. Hi, thanks so much for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a former police reporter, and my main point is recruiting. I think that we're recruiting the wrong people, sort of gun first types. I also want to give kudos to the organization called Communities United Against Police Violence. They have a whole lot of wonderful suggestions. But I know that Berkeley, California has done a big thing about not doing car stops. And then there's this movement to get the police out of cars and onto the streets. I know we need to do something. There are a lot of suggestions, but the people who are being asked to carry these guns are too quick to use them.
Sandra, do you worry about, as Susu's raising, who is ending up in the police department? And I know what you've said about Derek Chauvin. Not every officer, obviously, is a Chauvin. But do you worry that recruitment and training is not at the level that it should be, which would also address some of the things that DA is saying?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And that's something that Chief Arredondo has been working on. And the city council has blocked him in different ways. He had to cancel a recruit class that was last year. This is true. The most diverse recruit class he had. And had to cancel it because, again, who has the resources? It is city council. And right now, however, I think they just graduated 17 new recruits. And I'm so surprised anybody would want to work for Minneapolis police right now. I mean, I'm shocked. But it is an extremely diverse class that is under a black man who is from South Minneapolis, who many, many black neighbors and leaders actually do still think it's credible, and who have an initiative to take up hotspots in North Minneapolis hand in hand with the police, hand in hand with interrupters and the violence prevention officer. We see it as a both and. We need police and we need community.
Sandra, DA, thank you so much. I know you both have busy days and I really appreciate the hour. DA, thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.
Sandra, thank you very much. Good to have you on the air.
Yeah, thank you, Carrie.
Special coverage throughout the day on NPR News, including on Angela Davis's show at 11 a.m.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. You can add your voice to the discussion by calling in at 800-242-2828 or tweeting us at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. To hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks!